Beyond the Goal. Ellie Goldratt on Production According to the Theory of Constraints. This is an excerpt of the Goldratt S&T series, Moving from Make to Stock to Make to Availability. Goldratt programs are available at www.toc.tv.
Let's review where we are. We've started with aligning production to actual demand. In other words, we've shifted the focus from the efficiency of the plant, trying to produce as much as our resources are capable, to restrict the production to be in line with what the market wants. What were the steps that we've taken? We first of all have determined, logically, common sense way, based on the information that we have, being totally aware that the information is not deterministic or accurate, we have determined, first of all, the levels of inventories that we should have if we want to provide very high availability. Then, once we had that, and this didn't take too much time, as we said, a few days, we went to the shop floor, and we sorted out the production orders. We took out the production orders that we don't need. In other words, we have already enough inventory to satisfy the market demand. We trimmed down the quantities to be in line with what we really need. And, not less important, we issued orders for products that we do need. And then we've established the priority system on the shop floor. The priority system that is totally in line with one objective, which is having full availability. What were the results? What must have been the results? Availability became much, much better on the spot because we revealed so much excess capacity. We didn't use it just to make sure that the people are working, but whatever is not needed, we are not producing now. So, of course, we have exposed a lot of capacity. And this capacity was used in order to align much better the finished goods, which means availability have improved dramatically in a very, very short time. While the inventories are now taking a nosedive. Remember, when we set correctly the targets for inventory, we took into account that the lead times inside the production will drop to minimum half. And because of it, the inventories now are very rapidly reducing to what? To about half the level of inventory, if not less, than what we had before. How much time it will take until we reach there? Well, it depends on how much we were not good before. Because if, for example, from a particular product, we have 6 months of inventory where we should have 1 month, until we reach the 1 month, it will take another 5 months until the market will take it. But definitely remarkable improvements. Then, in the cases where the company operates through regional distribution centers, we have now done the exact same thing in the regional work centers, where we've established what should be the inventory levels there, and they are by far less than what we had before, simply because of replenishment time. Now that we can rely on the fact that the products are available at the center warehouse, at the plant warehouse, replenishment time is just transportation. And because of it, enormous reduction in the inventory levels that have to be held in the regional warehouse is dictated. Full availability, the service level now to the clients is at levels that almost are regarded as a dream. And the inventories are reducing even more. Why? Because now that we hold most of the inventory in the central warehouse rather than the regional warehouse, the impact of the variability of the market has been reduced dramatically. I hope that you paid attention to it. The variability per regional warehouse in relative terms is much higher than on the central warehouse where we have the aggregation. By taking the inventory backwards, we have caused the inventory to be even lower than before. Basically, the inventories now are diving toward about one-third of the inventories that we had before. Very impressive, excellent results. And that's where the big danger is, because the situation now is improving in such remarkable speed and so significant that you might be under the impression that we finished, that we've done whatever we could have done in production, and maybe we can still improve it, but this is only in the fringes. We've reached the diminishing returns. That's not the case at all. So let's highlight it in more depth. Let's highlight that actually the room for improvement that is still available if we just take the prudent actions is even bigger than what we've done so far. Let's talk about dealing with disruptions to flow. Have you noticed we have not yet improved the plant itself in terms of the local improvements that we can do? Do you really believe that every machine is maintained perfectly, that everything is running smoothly on the shop floor? We have changed the mode of operation, but we didn't dealt with so many disruptions that exist yet on the shop floor. Should we? And the answer is definitely yes. But in what way and how to go about it? So that we continue this momentum that we build, that every action that we take delivers almost immediately significant results. If we will not pay attention to that, we will end up where most of these improvement projects is ending up, which is lip service. So let's go and analyze it logically. When surplus inventory does not populate the queues, any improvement in flow translates into shorter replenishment time. Very important concept. Look, before that, the queues were populated with so many orders calling for production of products that we really don't need now. So improvement in the local processes, even though it improved the flow, it didn't improve the company, because it just improved that we can do faster the wrong things. So the first things that have to be done is, of course, to populate the floor only with things that we need. But when this is done, and we've done it already, every improvement to flow now translates one-to-one to what? To reduction in replenishment time, and that's why it translates into lower inventories that we have to hold in order to ensure perfect availability. That's the time to pay attention to it. Shorter replenishment lead times, better flow, enable the system to hold lower levels of inventory while increasing the flexibility to react to changes in demand. Obviously, the need to continuously improve flow is imperative, considering that the constantly generated increase in demand reduces flow. Look, we have now ability to service the clients like never before. This means sales will grow. If sales grows, the reaction time to the increased sales may go down. We simply don't have enough surplus capacity. This will mean deterioration in the service will start. To prevent that, we can take one of the two things. Either to add more capacity, and remember, adding capacity is very expensive, or to improve the flow by taking care of the problems. Don't you see what is the outcome of all of that? The strategy that we must adopt, and this must be the governing strategy for production. Better flow is regarded by production as the most important element under their control to improve availability. This becomes a motto of production. Yes, there are other actions that can be taken to improve availability, but these actions cannot be taken by production. But production can take the action, which is improving flow, which has dramatic impact on that. So that's become their motto. Let me here stress the more generic concepts. Some of you have read the articles that I wrote called Standing on the Shoulders of Giants, where I've analyzed the work of the big giants of industry, starting with Ford that invented the flow lines, and then going to the person that I consider the biggest genius in industry, in operations at least, which is Dr. Ono. The one that have not just invented, but implemented the Toyota production system. The one that all of Lean came out of. And what I have tried to show in that article is that they followed rigorously the four elements, the four basic steps of flow. The first one is that improving flow is the main objective of production. Exactly like we said before. The second one is that in order to go about it, not just give it lip service, you have to establish a mechanism and to implement a mechanism that prevents overproduction. Yes, flow lines are so effective not because they are conveyor belts, but because there is limited space in front and after every work center in a line. And if this inner line, a work center, filled up the space after it, and he continues to produce and spill it on the floor, nobody regards it as effective. In other words, the real thing there is don't produce when it's not needed. Same thing is definitely for the Kanban system. You don't have a Kanban card. You may be a very expensive worker working on a very expensive machine, but if you don't have a card, you are not allowed to produce. These are the mechanism to prevent overproduction. That's the first step, because otherwise the flow is populated with so many things that shouldn't be there. And then improving the flow does not help the company. It just improves and enables us to do faster the things that we shouldn't do in the first place. What we've done so far is we actually implemented the mechanism that prevents overproduction. Haven't you noticed? We've established what the levels that we need from finished goods, and we are making sure that only those levels will be maintained, no more. And in order to enable that, we have to condemn local efficiencies, because otherwise what will happen? Now that we have excess capacity, even if the inventories are appropriate, even if we have reached all the levels that we wanted to reach in finished goods, since we do have people which don't have what to do all the time, we will make sure that they are working. In other words, we will violate the basic rule of flow. But then comes the fourth element. And the fourth element is, now that you prevented the overproduction, you have to balance the flow. In other words, you have to concentrate to take all the disruptions that slow down the flow. Only then. You see, this is one of the problems of theory of constraints. Practical problems. When Ford have put his rules of preventing overproduction by limiting the space, or when Ono have put his rules of preventing overproduction by limiting the amount of inventory per product that is allowed to accumulate between each two work centers through the Kanban system, the immediate result of these actions was that the total output of the company, the throughput, went down. And that's why there was no choice but to continue immediately to start to improve the flow by addressing the local processes. The problem of TOC is that the mechanisms that we are using to prevent overproduction, rather than reducing the throughput of the company, are increasing it dramatically while reducing the inventories. And because of it, there is a tendency to think that we've finished, that it's okay, that we've already got all the improvements. No way. We do have to continue, exactly like Ford and Arnold done. We have to continue to deal now with the local disturbances in order to improve things by another order of magnitude. That's imperative. But this does not mean that we have to deal with every disruption. Because there are so many disruptions, there are so many things that can be corrected. The question is to build the mechanism that prioritize which disruption should be dealt with. You know what will happen otherwise. What disruptions are we going to deal with? Not the ones that it's important to take out, but the ones that we know how. Grave mistake. In lines, it's so obvious what to deal with. Because if one work center in the line stops, very soon the whole line stops. In Kenben, in just-in-time or lean Toyota production system, Arno had to establish a whole mechanism in order to guide where should the disruption be dealt with. The whole mechanism known as by reducing the number of Kanbans and then reducing the number of items per container, where he put the target to be one-piece flow. We have to establish now the mechanism that will tell us where to concentrate, on which disruptions we have to eliminate. That's what is standing now in front of our eyes. Let's see how to build such a mechanism. Interesting, right? Yes, we have done fantastically so well. This does not mean that we cannot do much, much more. But what I'm stressing is if you don't take the next step, you've just left more than half of the benefits just laying on the table. Everything's ready for it. Provided that we'll continue to think and find exactly what is a mechanism so we don't shoot in the dark. What are the parallel assumptions that the facts of life that can guide us in building such a mechanism? First one is, an accumulation of work in process before a work center is a clear indication that the work center contains a source of disruption to flow. Correct? Why is it piling there? Because it cannot move fast enough. What does it mean? There is something that prevents it. So here is a source of disruption. But there is another angle to it. When the source of disruption affects several work centers, accumulation of WIP cannot be used as a guide to the source of the disruption. A more elaborated mechanism is needed. What do I mean by a source of disruption affects several work centers? Let me take a very clear case that I have seen back in 1981. The problem was that there was not enough capacity of the forklift. The forklift. And the forklift had to move the big heavy containers from one work center to the other. And simply there wasn't enough capacity of the forklift. And because of it, what happened? Of course, flow was disrupted. But in the morning, the pile was here. And then when the forklift came, the pile was there. And the next day, the pile was a total different place. There was not a constant accumulation in front of one work center simply because the source of the disruption was not the work centers themselves. It wasn't so easy, by the way, even though in retrospect it was unbelievably easy, to identify that the real disruption is not in the work centers at all. It's in the capacity of the worklift, of the forklift. After that, I've seen so many other cases where the source of disruption can be, for example, the tool room. Or it can be some policy that batches work in such a way that it affects many work centers. Or some a quality control procedure that is not applied in one place but in several work centers. How to find out the source of disruption when it affects several work centers is not a triviality. But if we will not do that, we will try to improve each work center. And we'll improve them. The only problem is that this improvement does not contribute to the improvement of the whole plant. It's pure waste. So what do we have to do? The overall tactic is disruption to flow are identified and effectively removed. Fine. But now, because of what we said before, let's understand the guideline. And this is given in the sufficiency assumption. When a quick and dirty technique can yield significant results, it should be used before the better, but longer, to implement technique is put in place. Look, that's exactly our situation. From one hand side, we have a very crude, very quick technique, which is where is the accumulation of the working process. This does lead to where, in cases, that the source of disruption is in the work center itself. Yes, it does not help you to find sources of disruptions that are affecting many work centers, but it does help you to find a major part of the disruptions. This is something that we can do right now. Let's do that. And not delay everything to say, okay, let's first of all build the whole process that will enable us to find any disruption. This means that when we are going now to actually do the improvements, we have to separate into two steps. First of all, the localized disruptions, the one that can be identified by the accumulation of work in process, and then to build a whole mechanism that can identify any disruptions, whether or not it's localized. Let's see how each one of them is done. First of all, let's start with localized disruptions. The longer the WIP is waiting in the queue, the bigger is the disruption to flow. For sure. Oh, by the way, this indicates something. The size of a queue should not be judged according to the amount of inventory, but according to the length of time the inventory waits. That's what is much more important. If you have a real disruption, this means that the inventory will wait for a long time. That's the real indicator. A queue before a work center can be reduced by increasing the effective capacity of that work center. Wait. This does not mean immediately go and buy more capacity. It means let's find how to utilize this work center much better. Unfortunately, the conventional mode of operation, that mode of operation which is totally dominated by local optima, musts opportunities to economically and rapidly expose more effective capacity from existing resources. Which means, even though we have something that is a problem for a long, long time, now we have to go and visit it. Because this new frame of mind of who cares about local efficiencies will enable us now to do basically miracles, to take actions that will solve the problem, even though conventionally we will never look at them. In a minute we'll give you some examples. Basically it means let's go back to that and let's do it now. Strategy. That's objectives that we want. Where relevant, hidden capacity is exposed. How? The source of the disruption is not necessarily lack of capacity. Typically, it is the mistake that prevents the exposure of the existing capacity. In most cases, additional capacity can be exposed by simple means like ensuring that the identified equipment is not idle during lunch or shift change breaks. Suppose that you're working three shifts. Is the equipment working full three shifts? I know that it's a naive question, so in order to explain why I'm asking it, let me tell you a real story. The plant was in Israel. The plant was producing bomblets for the big bombs. Never mind about the morality of doing it. Do mind, but not now. This was so important, and the quantities that were needed were so big that the Israeli DOD have approved a lot of money to buy all the sophisticated machines, and they put a fantastic line to produce these bomblets. The line was not producing the required quantities. They were falling behind about 15% relative to the target 1 month after the other. It became so bad that the Israeli DOD have threatened that they will take back the order and will transfer it to a plant in Germany. This means unbelievable insult to their pride on top of the financial loss. The line was working three shifts. Where is the accumulation of the working process in the line was obvious. Here is the machine that doesn't have enough capacity. Here's a disruption to flow. The procedure was that when the shift ends, people are now going to take a shower, change clothes, go to the buses that have brought the new shift to go home. These people who just came to populate the next shift now have to change clothes and then to go to the line. In short, whenever a shift change occurred, a whole hour was lost, effectively. The suggestion was, wait a minute. We are not talking now about the whole line. We are just talking about this work center that you don't have enough capacity. The one that is the problem here. This work center is populated by three people. Why won't we do change the procedure so that these people continue to work until their replacement came with the buses, changed clothes, and now they are ready to take over? Only then these people will go to take the shower and go home. Oh, wait a minute. But the buses have gone already. How can we bring these people to home? You know what? Take a taxi. They are not living in one place. Take three taxis. What are you talking about? Do you know how much the cost of a taxi? And to do it every shift? Then we've done the calculations. If we'll take these taxis, we are going per each shift change to win 1 hour. 1 hour of what? A flow of the whole line. Throughput of the whole line. So we've done the calculation and turned out that each day, what is really the price of not having the taxi? The price is so high in terms of lost throughput, lost revenue directly to the bottom line of the plant, that they could have bought every day not just a taxi, but the license to the taxi. You understand now what I'm talking about in terms of local cost savings prevents taking obvious actions to improve the flow? So let's go back. We identified where is the biggest accumulation of work in process in terms of time. And then you take actions like you ensure that the identified equipment is not idle during lunch or shift breaks. You are offloading work from the identified resources to less effective work center, but the work centers that do have ample access capacity. You use lean techniques to shrink the setup time on the loaded resources. These techniques are fantastic, etc. This is the goal if you want more ideas. The tactic is the following. The work centers that have chronic queues. Chronic queues means that not that it's accumulation once in a blue moon, but such accumulation, such stoppage in the flow occurs frequently. The work centers that have chronic queues are identified and rated. Rated means who is the first one to deal with, who is the second one, and so on. Improvement teams are guided to take prudent actions to expose additional capacity for these work centers. Remember, most of the time, the actions that has to be taken require changes beyond what the worker or even the foreman can approve. So make sure that the right people are populating these action teams. For example, the change in what I've described with this triviality about the taxis cannot be authorized by a foreman. You do that, you get the first pass. By the way, don't underestimate how big it is. But that's not enough. Now let's go and deal with the trickier ones, which are not less devastating. Dealing with disruptions, even in cases where they're not affecting just one work center. And here, you have to bear with me. We'll have to define a whole new nomenclature in order to deal with that, which means it's even more important than usual. First of all, what's the problem? When the source of disruption affects several work centers, accumulation of work in process cannot be used as an effective guide to the source of disruption. Simply, the accumulation, if it exists, and it does exist, moves from one place to the other. There is no stability here. You know this phenomenon. The strategy is, major sources of all disruptions are identified and prudently dealt with. The question is, of course, how? Fine. For that, as I said, we'll have to define a few things. First of all, what is a disruption? A disruption is a delay in the flow. Something is waiting, that's a disruption. And if it waits for 2 seconds, it's a small disruption. It's still a disruption. But this definition tells you immediately we don't have to deal with any disruption. The problem with disruptions is that we cannot say, okay, small disruption, ignore. Why? Because for each work order, delays accumulate. If we have something that goes in through 10 different work centers, and each one of them has a disruption, these disruptions accumulate so that the work orders, once he finished all of them, and each time it was delayed, the delay is now not small at all. It accumulates. So we cannot offhand say, these disruptions are too small. But on the other side, how do we deal with it? We have to define something which says, this disruption, even though it's small, due to the accumulation, it can really contribute. That's what leads to the next definition. In conventional environments, where the touch time is a very small fraction, less than 10% of the average lead times, and as we said, this is the case in the vast majority of production environments, non-trivial disruption is defined as one that causes a delay longer than one-tenth of the average lead time. Usually one-tenth of the average lead time, since it's an order of magnitude smaller, one-tenth, I would have neglected. We cannot do it because, as we said, disruption accumulate. But if a priori it's one-hundredth of the lead time, even if disruption accumulates, it's still very small. Remember the rule. A cent plus 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 a cent is still less than a dime. So I will not look on cent. But if I'm talking about $10 plus $10, that's another story. So here is a definition of non-trivial disruption. Remember, the non-trivial disruption still may not affect anything if it doesn't accumulate. For that, and we need to continue on. Disruption that endangers high availability is a disruption that causes the finished goods inventory to reach the red zone or to stay in the red zone, which means real damage. Let me repeat again. The judge of what disruption is damaging is not by looking at the disruption itself, not by looking on the work center, but looking on its effect on what? On the availability. On the amount that it endangers availability. That's the judge if a disruption is serious or not. Now, what does it mean? Means the following. A major source of disruption is the one that systematically endangers high availability. With this nomenclature, we can now start to build the mechanism that will enable us to identify what? The major source of disruption. The one that, if we will correct, will really improve the overall performance of the company. Most non-trivial disruptions are not and do not contribute to disruptions that endanger availability. Hello, even disruptions that you see that they delay things. This does not yet mean that they really endanger the availability. So by looking on the magnitude of the disruption itself, except for super extreme cases, looking on the magnitude of the disruption itself is not enough to say we have to deal with the source of the disruption. This is not the correct way. It will not lead us to focus our improvement efforts correctly. Likewise, in conventional environments, as long as there is enough protective capacity, more than 10%, most work orders, and when I say most work orders, I'm talking about more than 90% of the work orders, are expected to be completed in less than 2/3 of the average lead time. Still, a work order that took longer to finish might not point to a source of disruption, since at that time its color might be still green, which means there is plenty of inventory in the plant warehouse. So even when I'm looking on a work order that was delayed to the extent that now it took twice as long to finish, this is still not telling me that the disruptions that this work order faced are serious enough to deal with. Because it might be that when it finished, even though it took twice as long, there was still enough inventory. And then it means correcting these disruptions will not improve the performance of the plant. It will not improve the availability. So if I cannot look on the disruption and I cannot look on the work order in order to identify what are the disruptions that are really important, the disruptions that endangers availability, what should I look on? The combination. Let's see. What's the meaning of looking on the combination? Therefore, only a work order that is not finished in 2/3 of the average lead time and whose color is red is a valid indication of a major source of disruption. In other words, a work order which is late, and because it is late, already the inventory in the finished goods is too low. Only then I know that I have a problem. Okay, how do I build a mechanism based on that realization? No, it's not so difficult, but since the whole view is a little bit different. Disruption is not a problem. A disruption that takes a long time is not a problem. A worker which is late is not a problem. What is a problem? Only the things that endanger the availability. To start to look from this angle is a little bit, at least takes time to adjust. And that's why from first glance it might look to you that the mechanism that I'm now proposing is maybe a little bit complicated. It's not. It's common sense. The minute that you are used to think along that lines. What is the procedure? The cause for each non-trivial disruption is reported and stored in the general bank of disruption. In other words, whenever we have a delay which is non-trivial, remember the definition, a delay which is a delay for 1/10 of the lead time or more. The source for it, the cause for it should be written. What is the recommendation? What is the cause for it? Don't do any analysis. And don't tell the worker to tell us why the delay was there. Instead, ask what the work order is waiting for. What are you waiting for right now? And it might be an answer like, I'm waiting for the forklift. Or it might be, I'm waiting for this tool. Or I'm waiting for some oil. That's the cause. And that's register. Don't take any actions yet. Who said that this disruption is important in terms of jeopardizing the availability? But store all of this information. Now, per work order, the time from its release is tracked. So when I'm looking at work order, I should know this work order was released 4 days ago or it was released 7 days ago. When the time since the release of a work order is longer than 2/3 of the corresponding average lead time and the color of the work order is red, in other words, here is a problem, all corresponding disruptions to that work order that were reported before, because remember, this work order until it reached this situation was delayed here, was reported 4 days ago, and then was delayed in another place and it was reported, and then it's now delayed and it is reported, all of the delays that were reported on this work order are now pulled from the general bank of reporting and are placed in the relevant bank of disruptions. In other words, we have this big bank of all the data of whatever disruption happened, when, to what work order, and what was the cause. We are pulling now from this bank into a special bank, much smaller, only in cases where we have a work order which is already very late, but then we pull all the disruptions that occurred to this work order in the past. What do we do with it? Nothing yet. Once appeared, for example, a week, Pareto on the relevant bank provides a major source of disruptions. In other words, now we are going once a week, we are looking on all the causes that were pulled into the specific bank, into this second bank, and we are doing a Pareto. How many times each one of them appear? This, the one which is on the top, is the one that we have to deal with. And then the second, and so on. Basically, what we have to do is cross-functional improvement teams are guided to take prudent actions to eliminate the major source of disruptions. In other words, they are going now over the result of this PERT analysis, start with the first one, say, fine. Now that we understand that that's what we have to deal with, let's analyze this in depth, let's find out what is the real cause, and let's find out what is the correction. For example, I'm waiting for, remember this where the things that were reported, forklift. So when I'm pulling it out, I will get as the first thing on the Pareto, the forklift is the things that the real problems we're waiting for too much. Fine. Now, what do we do about it? No. The answer is not so quickly, let's buy another 3 forklifts. Because it might be that if you add another 3 forklifts, there is no room for them to move. So instead of solving, you've just created a bigger traffic jams. You have to think carefully. For example, in this case, the answer might be, wait a minute, why do we need a forklift to start with? Because the containers that we are moving are 30 kilograms each. And so we cannot move it by hand. We have to use a forklift. But what prevents us from using containers of 5 kilograms and then it can be moved without any problem? That's a real example that was in reality. But you understand that to initiate such a thing, it's not the local teams that can decide it. Especially when many times this software disruption is some policies that was dictated by who knows what, who knows whom. You need this cross-functional to really analyze it and come with prudent answers. Otherwise, the solution can be even worse than the problem. The Kaizen method, for example, for analysis, once you have such a focus, is excellent. Nothing special here. But if you do that, do you understand what is happening? The flow becomes much, much better. You've exposed more capacity and you shrink the lead time, which means not only that now you can provide this excellent service with much less inventories, you can, without additional investments or manpower, deal much better with changes in mix and increase in demand, which means every increase in demand, all the throughput portion of it will glide directly to the net profit. This action is what triples the net profits of the company. So please do it. That's what enables us to say, fine, we've achieved the alignment of the supply chain. We have achieved this fantastic competitive edge. Does it mean that we've achieved our objective? Not at all. We've achieved beautifully the first step. Remember what we said. Build is very important. We've, by that, done the build. Yes. But does it mean that our sales will go up Yes. Rapidly? No. We have to learn how to capitalize on this fantastic competitive edge. And this is as big a problem as to generate the competitive edge. So we will have to discuss it in depth. Let me just read the topic for to understand how important it is. The required changes in the company's approach to capitalize on remarkably better service. The inventory turns offer is different in nature from the changes the company did in the past, new products or new markets. In other words, this is a fantastic paradigm shift for the salespeople. And if we don't take it seriously, and if we will not address it to the depth, the salespeople and your marketing is unable to take advantage of it. So you have a fantastic competitive edge and you'll waste it. In other words, definitely at this stage you are sitting on a gold mine. But this does not mean that you are digging the gold. It might mean that you are sitting on a gold mine and crying. Or even worse, sitting on a gold mine, sales are going up a little bit because the clients are not blind to what happened, your existing clients. So you are very happy, but you actually missed the whole boat. We have to go and do the capitalized portion. Then you are talking about real benefits.
This has been a HyBridge Audio presentation.